Want to expand the influence of design? Pragmatic Institute offers interactive, actionable courses for designers who are looking to contribute more strategically in their organizations. Explore our offerings such as Business Strategy and Design and Influence Through Storytelling at pragmaticinstitute.com/design.
Hello, and welcome to Design Chats, a podcast from Pragmatic Institute, where we sit down with design leaders, practitioners, and alumni to discuss how to grow the strategic impact of design. I am Rebecca Calangeris of Pragmatic Institute and your host for today's episode. Today, I am extremely excited to have with us Vincent Matti, who is the Global Head of Design for Onyx at JPMorgan Chase and sort of has a really strong career in a variety of organizations, being a designer and leading design organizations. Welcome, Vincent.
Thank you, Rebecca. I'm so happy to be here with you.
All right. So, Vincent, for those who have not had the privilege of speaking with you before, let's start a little bit, like, just give us a background. How did you get into design and what drives your passion for it?
I was really fortunate to attend one of the first digital media and design programs in the country. This is way back when, and I'm dating myself, but I went to art school and I was so lucky to have an incredibly diverse art education and design education. This was at the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. It was part of the inaugural multimedia program. I had an incredible director, instructor, and visionary. His name was Chris Garvin. And he was so wonderful in ensuring we had the greatest exposure to all things media. And really, this was a time before Adobe, before Amazon, and the teachers, the instructors all had a great insight of what was to come. I think really the greatest focus I had, believe it or not, in all of that was a psychology class. And we had classes called collaboration and spontaneity. We had classes in human-computer interaction, and we were reading Jacob Nielsen and Don Norman before they were sort of, I guess, the design rock stars that they are. And it just gave me this incredible foundation. I'll fast forward a lot. I found myself, I don't know, about 10 years later after school in industry, managing design teams. And I was recognizing that we were spending a lot of time and energy designing the wrong things for people. This was in the healthcare context. We were serving physicians, patients, clinical research and science. And it wasn't even that people weren't using our products. They were really angry, like literally angry about it. And my education just all came full circle where the focus in really understanding people and the sort of cognition that comes with design started resonating. And that was it for me. At that moment, that click had me focus from every step forward on not just designing for people, but really understanding people, their motivations, their behaviors, and everything that I've led or been a part of since that moment, since that click, if you will, has been this blend of understanding people and designing for them. Not sure if that answers your question directly, but that really was the premise to it all.
I love that. And I think what you describe there in both your education and your experience is what makes design so powerful. Yes, it is the core skills, the core understanding of design, but it's so much more, right? You talked about collaboration, you talked about psychology, you talk about all of these other things that really come into being a strong designer. And I think that sometimes that's overlooked, but I think you're right. That is the difference between design, period, and sort of real human-centered design. And it's also, I think, where designers like yourself find your passion, right? Is really that understanding of the bigger piece and the bigger sort of goal.
Completely. And I love that you said the word goal, because I even find today, and we talked about my education, we're about like decades later from my education, it's really interesting on how product teams, technology teams, even big design teams lose sight of goals. And I feel like everything that's right now hot in our industry, we talk about OKRs, objectives, outcomes. I think it's well-timed and it's about, I think all of us are maturing to this point that we have to stay focused on goals, serving people. And if we serve the human side of the goals, the people-oriented goals, I think there's great business value to come from it. And a lot of my career and a lot of, I guess I'd call it my design leadership, stems from serving people first.
Yeah. Let's talk about that. That's really what we want to dig in today, really, is design leadership. And I think we talk about this in many different ways. Some people think of design leadership versus sort of design management, and they're not really quite the same. So let's talk a little bit about that. Sort of, what do you mean by when you're thinking about design leadership? And I know you're really focused and dedicated in this space of helping with design leadership. What is it that design leadership means to you? And then why is it just so critical?
I believe design leadership is about inspiration. I believe it's about fostering change. I believe it's about authenticity in tackling the really ambiguous and tough challenges that designers are put in front of today and tomorrow. I think it's about collaborating across diversity. I think that's ever important in the future that we're stepping into. And I believe there's a lot about bringing every day, as hard as the work is, or as sometimes dark as it could be, maintaining a really strong perspective of optimism and positivity. In a sense, I really believe design leadership is shining a light in what could be really complex, gnarly challenges. The sort of principles that I bring forward every day, and my team's probably so tired of me saying these things, it really comes down to three things for me. I think it's about creating a safe and trusted space. I believe that it's about aligning really the multiple people, business partners, stakeholders, cross-disciplinary teams, whatever you want to call it. I think there's a lot about harmonizing and aligning people. And then and I think the third part of it is really not losing sight that we are in service to people. And those are sort of the three aspects that I hold myself at a really high standard for every day. Now, why? I think that's the second part of your question. I just believe that designers in the future, especially, are going to need psychological safety. They're going to need a creative space and encouragement. I don't think they need micromanagers these days. I actually believe that the designers of today they're smart, they're empowered, they're driven, they have a point of view. I think they appreciate guidance and mentorship and coaching. And that's a lot of the reasons why for those principles. I think setting conditions for the right culture of collaboration and having that creative space. I'm finding a lot of our product folks and a lot of the technology people have incredible ideas that just need to be more so facilitated and fostered. And I actually think planning is the thing that's most needed. I will say that, on your sort of point of leadership versus management, I think leaders have a plan. They have a vision. They have a story to tell. And I think great managers know how to do that. They're really organized, do the plan, carry out the plan in a very organized and structured way. I'm happy to keep going there.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that one of the things I like about your tenets and sort of what you were saying there as well is I think design leadership is both about leading the team and giving them the safety and environment and coaching that they want. But it's also about leading the organization to embrace and understand how design can have a big impact in the organization. I think, as you said, we have really talented designers in the world today, but not all organizations are as set up to understand and embrace that. And so when you're talking about design leadership, it's not about forcing design in the rest of the organization. It's really about enabling it to have that sort of impact and creating an environment that works for designers and for the rest of the organization, really building that, I don't want to say bridge, but creating an atmosphere where all of those parts can really embrace each other. Because I think sometimes that's a hard place to be.
Thank you for that, Rebecca. The thing that comes to mind for me on that point, and now after running a few laps in a range of different organizations, I think the most important thing for me, and I say this to myself every day, literally, is we have to meet our teams and our organization on where it is. We can't wish it to be more mature. We can't wish it to be something else. And understanding where it is and investing in maturing in it is the most important thing I think a design leader can do. And it's at times where I don't think a person can do it on his or her own, but I believe we can grow design maturity across all the functions we work with, whether it's a business, technology, or any other function, and take it one step at a time. And hopefully have some momentum too, where we could take leaps and not just steps.
I think that's a really good point too, right? We all can picture the place we want it to be, and it can be really frustrating if it doesn't feel like it's that way right now, right? To your point, we just want to wish it into existence. But part of being a leader is understanding where you want it to go and helping facilitate that path forward. So those were, you talked about three tenets, sort of the safe and trusted space, aligning across organization, and sort of the focus on people, right? Can we break each one of those down a little bit maybe and talk a little bit about more what it means for you and how you kind of focus on that as a design leader?
Sure, sure. Let's go one by one then.
Yeah.
Creating space, creating safe space. I think, what are the bounds? I think there's all these ways we can do it in space and time. And not to get too theoretical, but ultimately, how much can be done in facilitating a workshop with the right people in the room? I've learned that by creating that space, by well thinking through where are we now, what sort of framing is required, and how could we lead group process forward, is creating a safe space. And I find that design team members, strong design leaders or design leads, they are often the therapist of product teams. they hear it all. They hear it from the engineering side. They hear it from the product side. They hear it from the users. And I think that that gives a strong and capable lead the ability to navigate group process, to come to decisions, actions, and outcomes. So that's what I mean by creating space. Aligning teams, that sort of is well connected there.
Yeah.
And sort of, I find that person X is not talking to person Y and Z, or Z. And it seems almost logical that they should be talking. And maybe through some of the things what we learn as designers in the practice of reframing, the practice of bringing evidence and data to the table, especially for the people that we serve, the users or the customers, the clients, the buyers, whoever they are, that helps to align, that helps to connect and harmonize different people together. I also believe innately, and none of these are new concepts, so I take no credit for this, although I do practice these things heavily, I believe everyone has creative ability and creative juice in a sense. I find there's great magic in the room when you give people a pen and a piece of paper, a pencil, paper, a whiteboard, and we sketch, we create, we sort of run design studios. Those are so powerful in harmonizing and aligning people when they could share ideas and sort of reflect back, especially if we're bringing data and evidence to the table on what users need, what behavior change is required, and that sort of thing. And that leads me to, that, of course, naturally, the third point, always laser focused in serving people. And I look at it in two sides of things. When I say serving people, I really fundamentally embrace service leadership mindset. Really, as a leader, I look at my team and I look at my team members every day in the view of how am I best supporting or serving you? And then also take that lens on a macro view for all of us and talk about who are the clients, customers, people, users that we're serving every day. And again, I'll come back to where's the data, where's the evidence, where is the real truth and facts of what people need, what goals, what challenges, and all of that good stuff. Again, I'm not taking credit for any of this practice, but I am a firm believer in practicing it.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's also practice, right? Because we've got to do it every day, but know that sometimes we're going to fall short of our vision of ourselves and where we want to be, but we keep practicing it, right? It's an important aspect. It's, again, where true leaders come from.
True leaders, and not to take this conversation any which way, but I'm a huge advocate, a long time practitioner of yoga. And I think there's so many ethics in that sort of mindset of showing up, of practicing every day and meeting the business, meeting the teams we work with, where they are in time and helping to progress it in time. We're all human, right? Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we've got some people listening that maybe are just taking on a design leadership role or are looking at their organization and seeing opportunities, regardless of what their title is, where they could provide some leadership in that organization. And you were talking to them about sort of how they could start, right? And sort of how they could empower themselves to take some of that leadership role. What kind of advice would you give?
Well, that's a great question. One, I would say if you don't have mentors or coaches, people who have lived that role for many, many years and have actually been successful, go and find them. That's not hard to do, but really it's rarely done. You can grow and enable yourself light years ahead by sitting on the shoulders of giants, right? And so I'd say that is crucial. Two, get really smart on who you're serving. And when I say that, meaning there's always a person at the end of a product, a service, a technology, a solution, and understand who they are deeply. I have a story about that. If you want me to go there,
please.
I'd like to, but
yes.
but let me at least get the three or four different pieces of advice I would give. Three, I would say humility is key and this service mindset. Acknowledge that everyone that you work with is smarter than you, knows more than you, and come in with the humility of learning and listening to everybody. I couldn't say that strong enough. It is just so key. And then three, find the optimism, the positivity, and the light in it all. Is that three or four? Any which way. I just think that as a leader, there are so many folks looking to you for guidance. And there's always optimism. There's always positivity. There's always light to shine in the solution or problem space. Those are all, each one of those, I could give tangible examples, but I have a great story about bringing evidence to the table.
Please.
If you like.
I would love it.
Okay. So I was in a healthcare setting and it was actually focused in the area of oncology and cancer. A really, really tough topic. And the business problem itself was incredibly complex. We're talking about a health system that was comprised of three or four hospitals and ultimately completely committed to serving patients. But how to do that from a digital experience mindset was really, really tough. And it was at the point where in this department I worked for in serving, say, the marketing department, it was so bad that actually cancer patients would show up in the marketing department's lobby because they didn't even know where to go in a hospital. It was literally that tough on folks. As I was starting the new role, it was clear that we didn't have much data on the patients or the experience itself. And I really, really wanted to bring that perspective forward to really solve an honest to goodness, serious problem for the organization that I did believe in. I'll fast forward this story. I didn't receive permission from one of the senior most officers, the CMO, the chief marketing officer, to do the research that I knew we needed as a design organization. And ultimately could have easily said, my job would be easier without that research. That's really hard to do, to research cancer patients and their families. But I decided to empower myself and empower my team to do it anyway. I made a decision. I sort of made that game time call to go and get the data. We showed up in cancer support group meetings. We, on the ground, I guess you'd call this guerrilla style, we reached out to nurses, practitioners. We brought together a body of evidence that was a bit disparate in the wild, but strong enough that hardly anyone could argue. So it was just good enough. But I can tell you that after a year of doing it, that body of evidence, that perspective led to amazing things in this organization. Amazing things. Some things that led to some outcomes, if you will, and I'll give you like really the easy ones here without giving away too much of who or where. But one, it led to a content management solution and building the case for it, which is, as you could imagine, a multi-million dollar type of project. But we had data and evidence to build a case for. Two, it saved some jobs. When the question of why came forward, even though we were asked not to, it actually kept a lot of executive roles in place because they had the data to support it. And then three, and the obvious thing, it gave us a lot to design from, a lot to consider on who we're designing for, why, and we're making decisions on more of that interaction design layer or the information architecture layer or the content strategy mindset. It just gave us those fundamentals. So what's the takeaway of the story? I'll come back to one of my principles there. You are empowered as a leader to go and find that data. You don't have to ask permission for it. You can talk to people. You can leverage your network, leverage your friends and family, leverage your business relationships to bring a perspective forward, to be empowered and enabled to do the right thing and to design the right thing.
It's a great story. So I have a couple of follow-up questions. So you had not been given permission and you took it. When you started to talk about the results, how was that received, particularly by maybe the one executive had sort of not given the permission?
At first, jarred. But on the other side, and maybe this is the line between leadership and this more sort of command and control mm-hmm. cultures that some big companies are in. If I'm being asked to lead, that means I am provided with some autonomy yep. to meet and reach goals. My goal is to create a stellar experience that could have even measurable outcomes. I can't do that without that perspective. And so there are nuances to this all, but there was a raised eyebrow or two. On the other side, I made sure it was so good and it was so meaningful that someone couldn't question it.
Yep.
I also made sure that my bases were covered in terms of like, I didn't do this irresponsibly. I did this almost on my own time. I did this on my lunch break. I did this in my mornings. I did this after hours. I utilized what was around me. So I want to preface, I wasn't irresponsible about it. And it came through. I made sure it came through and I was pulled through in a very meaningful and valuable way. So yeah, I certainly put some credibility on the line to do it.
Yeah. Well, and I also think you talk about that you had great evidence, but it wasn't perfect evidence. And I think that's always true. Like one thing when we start doing research is, oh man, it's great. And you always feel like there's more perspectives to give. But you talked really whether it wasn't every perspective you, but it gave you enough and it gave you a lot to go on. And I think sometimes that's also a spot that designers and not just designers, others who do research can get stuck in the, when do I have enough done that I can start acting on it?
I love the mindset of just good enough.
Yep.
Right. Just enough to help us right here, right now. And we can always go and get more. There's so many experts and great resources out there of how to go and get it and the different ways you can go and get it. But I think my message to folks is be empowered and know you have all of these resources at your fingertips. Sometimes you don't have to ask permission.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right. One other area I want to talk a little bit about because it runs sort of through all of the areas that you've talked about. It runs through your story. It runs through the three main tenets is to do a lot of this effectively is the type of communication skills that a design leader needs to sort of build and strengthen because it's such a key part. So let's talk a little bit about, I know you've talked to me about this before, sort of both sort of how communication plays a role and as a design leader, what you should focus on with your communication.
Rebecca, I think that is one of the strongest and most important points a person could make. Thank you so much for bringing this forward. It's by far the most crucial topic when we talk about design leaders and design leadership and something that I seriously work on every single day under the heading of practice. practice makes perfect. How many times, how many articles, how many blogs have we heard of, I want a seat at the table. I'm not welcome to the table. Mm-hmm. And from my view, and I'm so thankful for the perspective I have, the mentors, the coaches, the managers I've had, I really do have a perspective on this. And that is number one, to be welcomed at the seat at the table means that needs to be earned. That's not just given. And that means that you're bringing a perspective of value to our team members, our teammates, our senior stakeholders, our chief officers. That means as design leaders, we have to understand and know the business as well as our counterparts. And I dare say, even have a perspective. It doesn't even mean to be perfect or whole, but have a perspective on that business. That's what earns a seat at the table. And also being able to communicate that perspective effectively. I've watched programs, and I know this sounds cliche and generic, but I think it's crucial. Programs like Toastmasters mm-hmm. or others literally change a person's career in 6 months, lift them to that role or that position that they've always wanted, and taking those communication abilities along with strong business acumen, diving into the business and understanding it, not having to rely on your product managers, product owners, business stakeholders to explain or define things. And of course, to your point, being able to either verbally or in written terms communicate that is, I think, one of the most important testaments of being a strong design leader. And so really, I don't think there's any silver bullet to this other than being able to practice, commit to improving communication, and really being, you know, if you're effective in the executive room, you know immediately if you're effective in a senior management meeting. And if you're not, or if I'm not, I am working every day to get really sharp in there so that when there is a major focus area in a product, in a solution, in a service, it's not that I'm knocking on the door. My goal and how I know I'm successful is when my door is being knocked on saying, hey, let's bring Vincent in and get the design perspective or get the product design perspective. That's, to me, one of the ways I'm assessing my success as a leader. And then back to your point, that's because I'd like to say if I'm not great, I'm at least okay at communicating really sharply, really succinctly, and really strongly at the executive level. That requires practice, that requires mentorship, that requires commitment to working on that. It's not something that just happens.
No, and I know from my own perspective too, the place I think I'm the hardest on myself is when I know we had the right plan and I didn't communicate it the right way. Or like when I have, maybe it's not even the right plan. It's a perspective that I know the organization needs to understand that my team has brought forward and I'm all excited about it. And then I don't present it the right way to that audience. So it's not just I spoke about it very clearly and concisely, but I also translated it for the audience. And some of like the biggest regrets in my career are where I missed that, right? Where you just think, nope, I didn't do my team and I didn't do the organization, not proud, right? But I didn't do everything you could. And again, it is a discipline. It is a place where you can always go back and communicate again, though it's always easier to get it right the first time. But it is something that it's very intentional to make sure that before I present, what are the main things I'm getting across? What does it matter for them? But I think as a leader, it is probably one of our biggest responsibilities, right? Is doing that translation layer and doing it well.
It's so true. And I'm going to bring something to life here. I have an amazing team right now. And there's a person on my team that's growing magnificently. I see incredible potential from a leadership perspective. And this person is about to present some really big topics with a great spotlight and platform. And this person came and asked me as a coach, hey, what would I consider to make this not just good, but spectacular? Mm. And here's the things that I've never been told. Well, I was told in a different context. For example, my grandfather was an attorney. And before he would have to go to work every day, his point to me was, preparation is what makes success, not luck, right? Mm-hmm. And my point to the member on my team, who I'm such a huge fan of, is simply, how many times did you rehearse before you went and you presented that 30-minute topic? Did you maybe record yourself once and listen back? And these are the sort of things that they're really basic. They're really fundamental. But that sort of iteration, if you will, we're all trained to iterate. That's where greatness comes from. That's where, to your point, the communication abilities really begin to grow. Either you're reflecting back on how you're doing it, or you have others reflecting back to you. And this culture of critique, of improvement, it's really a simple matter of taking the time to plan, to prep, to rehearse, and to sort of rethink those things. It sounds much easier said than done, but I really believe that's the core of it all.
Yeah. Yeah. And absolutely. Like one of the best advice I got was when you practice, you have to like practice out loud as a writer first, right? I always write it out and I'm like, okay, I'm good. And I'll read through it in my mind. But like, you have to say the words out loud. That is the practice that will help you deliver it well the next time. So it's little things like that, but it makes a huge difference.
Right. And just accepting the cringe of having to hear yourself, right? Just, yes. But it's so effective to hear yourself present, speak, or record yourself once. It almost transformed things overnight. The power of that reflection.
Absolutely. All right, Vincent, we talked about a lot of different things today. If you could get our listeners to do two things differently tomorrow based on what we talked about today, what would it be?
I'll come back to the point of giving the self or giving yourself permission to feel empowered and not to ask permission to do the right thing when designing for people. At the end of the day, I firmly believe our job is improving the lives of others and feeling empowered to do that. And the second thing, and this is maybe a good point for us to wrap on, I was recently exposed to an incredibly strong design leader out on the West Coast. Her name is Laura Lee Alvin. And when I came across her definition of design, I think it just opens up so much of what we are capable and empowered to do as designers and design leaders. So maybe just let me read this definition and we could land on this, which I think is just so powerful. And my, at this point, my favorite definition of design. And what Laura Lee writes is, design is conscious planning and meaningful action, creating relationship with humanity, nature, spirit, and time in service of life. Mm-hmm. And if that's what I'm waking up and doing every day as a design leader, then that's a job that I love. That's a job that I am committed to and sworn into.
Yeah. I mean, when you're passionate about what you do, this is where we started with what makes you passionate about design, right? When you're passionate about what you do, it certainly opens your spirit, it opens doors, and it opens opportunities. So I think that's a great quote.
Thank you. Thank you. I really do. I fundamentally believe that we are change makers. We are those that ride the waves of transformation, no matter where industry trends segments are going. And at this point, at this moment in our industry, it's such a fabulous time to step forward and be empowered as a leader.
Excellent. All right. Vincent, thank you very, very much for coming on the show today. It was an absolute pleasure talking to you and hearing your story and perspectives.
Rebecca, thank you so much for the time. It's been my pleasure. And I loved your questions. They're just so right on. Thanks for this all.
All right. For all those of you listening, if you'd like to learn more about these kind of conversations, how you can increase your impact in design, check out pragmaticinstitute.com/design. And thank you everyone for listening.